Breaking news, the U.S. Supreme Court with a historic civil rights ruling.
You could be married in this country everywhere, but you could still be fired simply for being gay.
This is going to have a transformative effect on federal civil rights laws.
I had a moment of celebration with my partner, and I think I may have let out a loud scream.
I think Bostock is going to apply in education, it's going to apply in healthcare, it's going to apply in the Fair Housing Act.
It's really a monumental, historic, landmark decision. Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappelle. UN calls for a global conversion therapy ban, protesters confront propaganda-prone Polish president, and queer workers get justice from U.S. top court. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Carol Myers.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending June 20th, 2020. The United Nations is calling for the debunked practice of conversion therapy to be banned everywhere. A new report documents the negative impact of the so-called treatment that's supposed to push queer people down a straight and narrow path. The report concludes that it's a scientifically bogus invention that leads nowhere. Researchers underscored how particularly horrific the practice is on minors who have no legal right to control their own healthcare decisions. They found that the young fall prey as a result of the desire of parents or guardians to have them conform to expectations, either their or their communities, regarding sexual orientation and gender identity. The document was issued by the UN's independent expert on sexual orientation and gender identity, Victor Madrigal Borlos. NBC News reports that it faced a lot of pushback from a number of states. Outright Action International's Sahar Mozami said, "It's been controversial, as they say at the UN. There were conversion therapy practitioners in at least 68 countries identified in the report, but researchers suggest that it's virtually a global pandemic, and, in many cases, a lucrative business for providers around the world." Outright Action International can only find 5 countries that have outright bans on conversion therapy: Brazil, Ecuador, Germany, Malta, and Taiwan. Canada is considering becoming number 6. There are regional bans in a number of other countries.
Poland's president, Andrzej Duda, is playing the queer card again in his bid for re-election. In recent speeches, Duda is claiming that what he calls LGBT plus ideology is just like communist indoctrination in the former Soviet Union. He says, "They are trying to convince us that they are people, but this is an ideology." His family charter includes promises to prohibit the propagation of this ideology and defend the institution of marriage, marriage defined as a relationship between a woman and a man. After about 100 pro-queer protesters surprised him at a campaign rally on June 15th, Duda invited them to meet with him. Only 29-year-old filmmaker Bartosz Staszewski agreed. Other activists demanded a public apology for Duda's inflammatory and dehumanizing comments first. The incumbent also invited his openly gay left-wing challenger to the meeting, Warsaw Mayor Robert Biedron. Biedron joined the call for Duda's public apology, which, of course, never came. A presidential spokesperson called Duda's meeting with Staszewski good and constructive. However, the activist said that he spent more than an hour talking and displaying photos of young Polish people who had died by suicide and gay people in Auschwitz, then finally stood up and walked out without a perfunctory handshake after Duda kept insisting that campaigning against LGBT plus ideology was a free speech issue. Duda can expect a friendlier visit with someone who has an affinity for right-wing autocrats. He'll be President Donald Trump's first White House visitor since the COVID-19 pandemic began. That meeting is set for June 24th.
The Trump administration took a licking in litigation this week. The U.S. Supreme Court declared on June 15th that LGBTQ people are protected from workplace discrimination by federal civil rights laws banning bias based on sex. We'll have comprehensive coverage of that groundbreaking decision following NewsWrap. Yet another legal setback may have gotten lost in the high court headlines. A federal district judge ruled that a U.S. gay couple's daughter born in Canada via surrogate is indeed a U.S. citizen. Mike Pompeo's State Department essentially argued that the child was born out of wedlock because one of her married parents is not her biological parent. U.S. District Judge Theodore Chuan disagreed. He ruled that the daughter of Rui and Adiel Cavite was a U.S. citizen at birth, born of married parents who were both U.S. citizens who had legally resided in the country before her birth. The Cavites are naturalized U.S. citizens. They were each born in Israel, but came to the U.S. separately. Their daughter Kesem was born in February 2019. The family was represented by attorneys from the queer advocacy groups Immigration Equality and Lambda Legal. Lambda Legal attorney Oscar Gonzalez-Pagan helped argue the case. He celebrated with a tweet saying, "Today's victory confirms once again that married same-sex couples cannot be carved out from laws tied to marriage." A State Department official had no further comment for the Washington Blade on June 17th beyond saying that it is reviewing the decision with the Department of Justice. The Cavite's lawsuit is reportedly just one of five cases challenging how the State Department, under Trump sycophant Mike Pompeo, mistreats married same-gender couples.
Just in time for Pride Month, the Episcopal Diocese of Missouri is celebrating its first openly gay black bishop. The Right Reverend Dion Kevin Johnson was born in Barbados and has been an Episcopal priest since 2003. He was consecrated on June 13th at Christ Church Cathedral in St. Louis. He marveled during his ordination service that a descendant of a slave could be called to be the Bishop of Missouri. "God is good," he said, according to the Episcopal News Service. It only took 179 years. Johnson went on to say, "We must be about the mission of working for justice and showing God's love in this time and place. We must be about the mission of speaking truth to power and making no peace with oppression." The new bishop marched in recent Black Lives Matter protests in St. Louis and said in a statement that fear would tell us that dignity belongs to some and not to others. As followers of Jesus, we must live and know that perfect love casts out fear.
Finally, two new openly gay stars were added to the arts and athletics universe this week. Popular Spanish crooner Pablo Alborán posted a 3-minute video on Instagram declaring,
"Y hoy quiero que mi grito se haga un poco más fuerte.
I want my voice to be louder and for it to have more value and weight.
Estoy aquí para contaros
I'm here to tell you that I am homosexual and it's okay."
No pasa nada.
Alborán has been nominated for a number of Latin Grammy Awards and has released several albums. He went on to say,
"La vida sigue igual.
Life goes on.
Yo necesito
Everything
ser un poquito
will
más
remain
feliz
the same,
de lo que ya era.
But I'm going to be a little happier than I already am." He described a supportive upbringing that allowed him to find his true self, but noted that many other LGBTQ people have not been so lucky. He said,
"Pero que esto,
I hope I can make somebody's journey easier with this message.
Pero
but above all,
esto,
I do this for me."
Lo hago por mí.
Alborán also said that he wanted to focus on his music career and not on being a high-profile queer activist.
Chilean pro basketball player Daniel Arcos decided to love and value himself by coming out, declaring himself to now be proud and free in a 3-page letter. The 26-year-old 6'3" small forward for CD Castro said that he had struggled with shame and self-acceptance for a long time. Leading Chilean advocacy group, the Homosexual Movement of Integration and Liberation, applauded Arcos for making a significant contribution to other players who may find themselves in a situation of grief or pain for not being able to reveal who they are. Arcos's lengthy letter included saying, "I am convinced that sport can include us all, but as long as issues like this are not visible and made natural, it will be difficult to advance. Respect is essential and the minimum we need to live in a better society free of prejudice."
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending June 20th, 2020. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is usually recorded in the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, but we're recording remotely during the COVID-19 emergency. The news is written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
and you can listen to News Wrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out Radio YouTube channel. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau. Stay healthy.
And I'm Carol Myers. Stay safe.
Hi, I'm Brian DeShazer, producer of This Way Out's Global Queer Read-In, a virtual Pride event streaming online Thursday, June 25th on thiswayout.org. 2020 Pulitzer Prize winner Jericho Brown, Maryland poet laureate Grace Cavallari, actor Alfred Woodard, playwright Charles Bush, writer-poet Alexis DeVoe, Grammy-nominated singer-songwriter Sophie B. Hawkins join a list of over 30 LGBTQI writers, playwrights, activists, and artists on camera reading passages from their favorite and influential works of queer literature and poetry. The event is free to the public to honor and celebrate the power of the written word, but additionally serves as an optional fundraiser for Overnight Productions, the parent nonprofit organization of This Way Out. Free tickets and tax-deductible sponsor opportunities are available at thiswayout.org. You'll hear the words of these writers read by us: James Baldwin, Audre Lorde, Paul Monet, Patricia Highsmith, Quentin Crisp, Truman Capote, Virginia Woolf, Janet Mock, and more. That's Thursday, June 25th, starting at noon Pacific time on Zoom and Twitch. Visit thiswayout.org for a full list.
Listen, my children, I shall be telling this with a sigh. Of all sad words of tongue and pen, the saddest are these: once upon a time.
Breaking news, the U.S. Supreme Court with a historic civil rights ruling today.
Landmark ruling for gay and transgender individuals.
This is a major civil rights opinion.
The most consequential Supreme Court decision since same-sex marriage was legalized 5 years ago.
Thank you,
the U.S. Supreme Court's fourth decision involving lesbians and gay men is its first to recognize transgender people. It marks a monumental advance for LGBTQ rights, but it comes with limitations. So we're turning to a gaggle of experts to sort it all out. Just what did the High Court rule on June 15th? It confirmed that the word sex in the list of categories protected from workplace discrimination under federal law does include sexual orientation and gender identity. The decision answered three consolidated cases based on Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. Gerald Bostock lost his job as a county child welfare official in Georgia when his boss found out that he had joined a gay softball team. New York skydiving instructor Don Zarda was fired when he came out to a client to ease her anxiety about being so closely strapped together. Amy Stevens had worked at a Michigan funeral home for 6 years and was let go 2 weeks after announcing her transition.
This truly is a historic ruling.
One of Amy Stevens' attorneys was Chase Strangio, Deputy Director for Transgender Justice with the ACLU's LGBT and HIV Project.
The court was unequivocal that federal prohibitions on sex discrimination include prohibitions on discrimination against LGBTQ people. So this means you cannot be fired across the country for being LGBTQ or otherwise face employment discrimination. But I think what is also so important is that courts use Title VII cases to interpret all of the other federal civil rights laws that prohibit sex discrimination. So this is going to have a transformative effect on federal civil rights laws in the context of housing, education, and healthcare, as well as credit. So this truly is a historic win.
Let me just tell you what Title VII says.
Marjorie Cohn is professor emerita at Thomas Jefferson School of Law and a former National Lawyers Guild president.
It makes it unlawful for an employer to fail or refuse to hire or to discharge any individual or otherwise to discriminate against any individual because of such individual's race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. So the question is that word sex. Does that include sexual orientation and gender identity? And the Supreme Court said 6-3, yes, it does. So it's really a monumental, historic, landmark decision.
We briefed this case for Neil Gorsuch.
Again, the ACLU's Chase Strangio.
He was our swing vote. He is a textualist. His jurisprudence is premised on the idea that you look to the words of the statute, not to the intentions of Congress at the time a statute was enacted. And we hoped that he would stick to his principles instead of reverse engineer an outcome based on politics. And he did that, and the chief joined. And I am shocked, but it was the right and righteous decision, and we were right on the law, and so were they.
Not all of them. Three justices opposed the majority with stereotypically homophobic, transphobic, and misogynistic arguments. CNN legal analyst Jeffrey Toobin.
Justice Alito has been perhaps the single most hostile to gay rights on the Supreme Court, so it's not surprising he wrote that with Justice Clarence Thomas. Interestingly, the other dissenter, Brett Kavanaugh, almost apologized for his vote in his dissenting opinion. And I think that reflects that the notion that you can discriminate against gay people in 2020 America is becoming increasingly intolerable.
Veteran Democratic strategist and political commentator Richard Socarides points out the grand irony the Supreme Court ruling resolves.
You know, it was kind of head-scratching that you could be married in this country everywhere, but that you could still be fired simply for being gay. Coming out is such a fundamental thing to the gay rights political movement, right? It's often said that the most important political act you can take as a gay person is to come out. But in many places, you couldn't come out because you would lose your job, you know, for half the state simply for being gay. That changes today.
Days before the justices handed down their ruling, the Trump administration tried to quietly announce its plan to roll back trans protections under the Affordable Care Act. The ACLU's Chase Strangio thinks they won't get away with that now.
The Trump administration issued a comprehensive anti-trans regulation at 4 p.m. Eastern time on a Friday, knowing that the Supreme Court was going to issue opinions 10 a.m. on Monday morning and could likely undo the very regulations that they were putting forth. So it was an act of just absolute cruelty towards LGBTQ people and people who need access to abortion, I might add as well. But ultimately, a federal agency cannot contradict the statute that it is implementing. And the ACA has a prohibition on sex discrimination, and that is the source of the protection. So the Trump administration is not the final word on the meaning of sex discrimination under federal law. The Supreme Court is. And they just made just absolutely clear that prohibitions on sex discrimination include LGBTQ people. So I think that rule is dead on arrival.
It may be dead on arrival, but the administration has determined to keep dragging the corpse around. The Health and Human Services Department still plans to strip trans people of their health care effective August 18th and take on the inevitable lawsuits.
Those regulations that allowed for equal access to trans people are pivotal in two primary ways.
Amari Jones is a journalist, founder and creator of TransLash, and a Soros Equality Fellow.
The first way is that for trans people who either need or choose to have medical interventions to aid with transition, either hormones or surgeries, we know that those medical interventions are life-saving. They have a dramatic impact not only on people's ability to, quite frankly, stay alive, but also to have an amount of well-being that allows them to be full citizens. And so it's pivotal in that way. The second way, of course, is that we know that many trans people are afraid to go into healthcare facilities. And that fear is driven by the fact of people's past experience with discrimination. I even have had that happen before. And all of that's happening against the backdrop of COVID-19. And so it was particularly cruel in so many ways.
Plaintiff Gerald Bostock said that after the first page of the 172-page ruling was published, the Supreme Court website crashed for a while, keeping everyone in temporary suspense.
I had a moment of celebration with my partner, and I think I may have let out a loud scream. And then moments after that, I was on the phone with Tom, my attorney.
Bostock is the only plaintiff from the three cases to live to see the conclusion.
I proudly stood by Amy Stevens and the Zarda family during this journey. And, of course, sadly, we recently lost Amy. But they share in this victory. Their families share in this victory with me and my family. And this is a victory that we all celebrate.
Don Zarda was a skydiving instructor at an outfit on Long Island here in New York State.
James Essex of the ACLU LGBT and HIV Project was one of the attorneys who worked on the landmark Supreme Court cases.
He was my client, or his estate was my client, with other lawyers on the case. I never met him. He died in 2014 in a tragic accident, skydiving accident. From the videos I've seen, from talking to the people who knew him, his surviving partner and his sister, he sounds like he was like a ball of energy and just life of the party kind of guy. Bill Moore, his surviving partner, tells a story about their first date. They meet, I don't remember where they meet. The next morning, Don takes him skydiving. That's like the joy of life, something he loved, and he immediately wanted this man that he had met, that he fell in love with, to share that joy. That, I think, captures something about Don Zarda.
I've been living basically two lives, one at home and in public, and one at work. And in the beginning, that wasn't so bad.
Trans plaintiff Amy Stevens spoke at an ACLU news conference last September. She died in May.
But as time goes on and as time progressed, I got to the point that living two lives, being two people, was becoming downright impossible. And I knew that I couldn't keep going that way. And things came to a head in November of 2012 when I stood in the backyard with a gun to my chest, pondering the question, if I can't go forward and I can't go backwards, where does that lead me? What's the point of continuing? And in that hour, going over that and over that in my mind, I chose life. And I realized that I liked me too much to just disappear and go away.
Rest in power, Amy Stevens. How far does the U.S. Supreme Court's LGBTQ employment discrimination decision go? The ACLU's James Essex thinks the ruling that will forever be known by the name of surviving plaintiff Gerald Bostock goes a long way.
I think Bostock is going to apply in education, it's going to apply in healthcare, it's going to apply in the Fair Housing Act, which covers sex discrimination, and now I think is going to cover LGBTQ folks. It's going to apply in credit and jury service. Those are the contexts where there already are bans on sex discrimination in federal statutes. Title VII covers employers with 15 or more employees. So it's a bunch of employers, but it's not all of them. And it's actually, I think, the majority of employers in America are small employers that are smaller than 15. That said, it does apply to those employers in all 50 states. Whether there's a local law or state law or not, doesn't make any difference. LGBTQ people are now covered against employment discrimination in all 50 states as long as you work for an employer that has 15 or more employees.
And the ruling is limited in other ways.
There are two big gaps in federal civil rights law vis-a-vis sex discrimination. There's no ban on sex discrimination in the federal law that bars discrimination by public accommodations, businesses open to the public in general. And there's no ban on sex discrimination in the federal civil rights law that bars recipients of federal funding, basically grant recipients from the federal government, which are lots of social service organizations, soup kitchens, drug rehab centers, stuff like that. When they get their federal grant, they have to agree that they're not going to discriminate based on lots of different categories, but not sex. And so Bostock only works when there's a pre-existing ban on sex discrimination.
Obviously, people are going to continue to face discrimination.
The ACLU's Chase Strangio.
We know that even when legal protections are in place, particularly our Black and Indigenous and Brown trans sisters, our femme sisters are facing relentless discrimination. And so we have to keep fighting. The laws is not the only source of protection, absolutely. But this is going to have a cascading effect. And all of the administrative actions that this administration has taken since day one, in 2017 from rescinding Title IX student guidance, those actions are completely undermined by yesterday's Supreme Court ruling.
Considering this week's historic Supreme Court decision in the context of these complicated times, here are some closing thoughts from plaintiff Gerald Bostock.
My hope is that this victory today, this celebration today that we all share in, that maybe that will shine just a little bit of sunshine on these dark days that we've been having. Absolutely, this world has no room for discrimination or racism. And I think the justice's opinion today is just one of the first steps in laying the groundwork for all of us being treated equally.
Our people gonna rise.
Our people gonna rise.
Our people gonna rise.
Listen to our cries through the pain and lies. Our people gonna rise.
Our people gonna sing.
Our people gonna sing.
Our people gonna sing.
In spite of everything, hear our freedom ring. Our people gonna sing.
Our people gonna fight.
Our people gonna fight.
Our people gonna fight.
Our people gonna fight.
For what we know is right.
March into the night. Our people gonna fight.
Our people gonna grieve.
Our people gonna grieve.
Our people gonna grieve.
Whatever you believe, we have the right to breathe. Our people gonna grieve.
Our people gonna grieve.
Our people gonna pray.
Our people gonna pray.
Take our rights away, see you on election day.
Our people gonna pray.
Our people gonna rise.
Our people gonna rise.
Our people gonna rise.
Listen to our cries through the pain and lies.
Our people gonna rise.
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 That was Emma's Revolution featuring Reggie Harris. Emma's Revolution will be taking part in This Way Out's virtual global queer read-in on June 25th. See thiswayout.org for details. Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Carol Myers and Michael LeBeau, produced by Brian DeShazer. Some comments for our Supreme Court ruling coverage came from Democracy Now!, the Pacifica Evening News, CNN, Now This, and Gay USA. Sly and the Family Stone performed some of the music you heard, and Emma's Revolution featuring Reggie Harris sang Are People Gonna Rise? Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and donors Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media and find out how you can join us for our Global Queer Read-In Virtual Pride event on June 25th. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on 4NSA News Aheads Queensland, KMUD Arcata, Eureka, Laytonville, Garberville, Shelter Grove, California, WLSL St. Leo, Dade County, Florida, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay safe, stay healthy, and stay tuned.